Oh my goodness. Whose idea was this? Wait, where's the...
I lost my list. Okay. So...
All right. Roger, because you can see the clock, can you give me like a 10-minute time frame and then another 10 minutes? Okay. So I don't know where it is in this, but one of the questions that I saw was, why don't I do this service in the winter, spring, when more people are in attendance? And it's because of this. it's also because 2 years ago, the only other time that I did this, I did it in the late spring, I guess, and there were two services, and then I didn't get the same questions, and everybody didn't hear the same answers, and so it didn't feel like that was necessarily fair, and I tried to replicate one that I did really well on and I thought was important during first service and at second, and it just totally flopped. So again, I feel like it's only fair to have us all together, whoever that all is. Why are you not at GA, at General Assembly? Thousands of Unitarian Universalists gather right now to be at General Assembly, our largest gathering of the denomination at any point in the year. I'm not there because I have a toddler who was sick all winter, and Tara and I both had to take a considerable amount of time off of work in the winter, especially Tara, because he was so ill, and had I gone to GA like I planned, she would have to take off more work, and we already, and she doesn't have that time. So the challenges and joys of being a working mom prohibit me from doing anything that is outside of my Sunday through Thursday where we have childcare. Let's just jump into this. Wasn't that one nice and easy? Do you believe in God? And my best response and always response is, what do you mean by God? I do not use the word God, but yes, I am a theist. I believe that there is something that exists between all things that are alive and that have been and that will be. I believe that thing is not authoritative, but able to be influenced, and also something that influences me. It's something that I have to be awake to, that I have to practice being awake to, but I believe exists as a source of energy and nourishment and holding. So do you believe in God? How do you decide which stole to wear? Are there certain requirements when purchasing a stole just because you like it? So depending on what I'm preaching about, I will often choose which of the stoles I want to wear. And today I felt like I needed a little color and energy, and so I offer you this one. This was a gift given to me by the Summit congregation when I was ordained, the first congregation that I served. Stoles are given to ministers upon the act of ordination. So if you are not an ordained minister, you cannot wear a stole. If you are not a fellowshipped or credentialed, meaning you've passed all of the academic requirements, internships, Sue Flynn, and your hospital or prison ministries, you cannot wear a robe. Each of these things are symbolic of who you are and who you serve. And today I wear this one because it brings me joy in the month of joy. What steps have you specifically taken to reach out to the African American community around us? So this is a really great question, an important one, and an update that I only have as of like the last few days that I'm excited to share. Many of you who participated in Beloved Conversations came to a panel discussion in the late winter, early spring, where we had three different individuals come and speak from different parts of our surrounding communities. Two folks, I think maybe all three folks were from Trenton. Does anyone remember all three? Dean Renee John, who is he's the head pastor at Trinity Cathedral in Trenton, and I have continued to be in touch. He's on sabbatical, but he's returning, and we are excited to start a partnership together. And just this last week, Washington Crossing, has been in touch with their anti-racist ministry, and we're hoping to start a partnership specifically between these two ministries first in a shared effort for what we are doing. And Trinity Cathedral is a multiracial congregation, and so this is an obvious first step for us to be in partnership with those that we've already begun partnership with. Is it true that you grew up in Montauk, New York?
No. I don't know why this one landed in my list.
I grew up in Mattituck, New York, which is on Long Island. It's the very close to the very eastern end of the North Fork of Long Island, and Montauk is just further east. If whoever wrote this wants to know more later, I'm happy to say more. How does a person become a worship associate? Express interest right now. Unfortunately, our path to leadership is not entirely clear because there isn't one. We are a congregation, a system congregation of adults of just under 400 adults, and with our children, significantly over that. And yet, we still have some systems that exist as if we are 150 people, and our path to leadership is expressive of that. And so we are working on that. That's a goal of ours for this upcoming year, is to give a clear path to leadership, just like we have a clear path to membership, and to make sure that everybody in the congregation understands how we do things, so that we get clear about how we do things. And right now, if you would like to be a worship associate or anything else, please express interest. And then, depending on how many people is needed for any particular ministry, it'll either be now's the right time. But of course, we look for demographics as well. We want to make sure that, interestingly, one of the things that I keep hearing is that you only see women up here on Sunday mornings, Roger. But I think that's a really interesting piece to lift up, that the only position that's changed in staff since my arrival is that your minister has become female and not male. But we're hearing a whole ton about how the staff is all women. So just think about how much weight my position holds and what you expect to see, and how the male presence balances out perhaps when you have a female worship associate, excuse me. So we actually have more men, I think just one more, it's like 60-40% men to women on the worship associates right now, but that's not the perceived experience. So if you are expressing interest in a worship associate position, there might be some discussion around who stands up there. I know that wasn't the question, but see what I did there? Please help me with a good response to the question I hear a lot: is Unitarian Universalism a real religion? Ooh, that's a question for all of you, it sounds. Yes, of course it is. Again, to the question of, do you believe in God? What do you mean by religion? The word religion, its etymology simply means to bind, to connect. What is it that we are binding and connecting to in this space might be different than what we think of in a traditional religious North American context. So Buddhism, we never question if that's a real religion. They don't express a belief in God or have worship practices in the same way that we think of the Protestant, Catholic, Jewish practices. And yet nobody negates that. It's because we are tiny. It's because we are pluralistic. It's because we don't have a creed that people question this. So my response to this would be, of course we are a religion. We have a religion with deep history, bound in Christianity and Judaism, that we have evolved from, that we are now moving forward through, not negating our past, but moving into our who we are today. I could keep going, as you know. And again, I think the response would be, well, we don't have a creed, but we do have a covenant. And that determines how we are with one another and how we are in the world. And that, in turn, affects what we believe. Yeah? Did you? Yeah, that's my big, okay. How to respond in love when my UU brothers and sisters are speaking with as much intolerance as ones they are criticizing. Isn't that the human condition? So how to respond in love? I guess my invitation to you would be to think of a time in which you yourself was so perhaps unable to see or hear hurt, heartbreak, whatever was in front of you that was not allowing you to engage fully in the way that you believed yourself to be. And that opens our heart so much more when we're disappointed by somebody, when we're angry with somebody. I have family members who are of this nature. I myself am of this nature at times, of course. And man, my first reaction is not to respond in love. But I have learned that I can't have a first reaction out loud. I have to have a first reaction of walking, of running, of doing whatever my spirit, of praying, of finding that energy, that entity, that that companions me to be my best self. And then that best self is vulnerable, not vulnerable enough to be brave enough to then say, Sandy, I love you, and that didn't feel right. And I know that you are somebody, I'm just using Sandy as an example, I just want everybody to know. If anybody wants to raise their hand and be a different hypothetical. And I know you, and I know you enough to know that you can hear what I'm about to say. I don't know if that's enough there, but I think we all are very easy to judge and not as quick to forgive. And when we can get into a space where we know how we've needed to be forgiven, it's a lot easier to understand where somebody is coming from. How long are you going to be our minister? and then it's very kind. It says, forever, I hope you can never leave. I will be your minister for as long as I am your minister, which means for as long as it is a healthy and reciprocal exchange of love and growth for all of you as well as for me. I'm thrilled to be entering into my fourth year with you all and cannot believe that's the case. And I see only forward momentum. But I believe that we all have to allow the Spirit to speak and share with us when the time is right for whomever can take us all into the right next stage. Is that fair? During my interview with you all, someone, I don't think is here, so I won't call them out, asked, like, how long are you going to be here? And I was like, well, my mentor was at his, he's retiring this year after 33 years. He started the year I was born. And in the same congregation. And he said, you know, the only way that you can do this, because ministers don't stay in ministry that long anymore in the same congregation. They don't. I will be honest with you. It's 7 years. It's 9 years. Because you put a lot into this, and there are relationships built, and there's stuff that happens, and yeah. And that's also sort of like the net, right? Your hair changes every 7 years or something, right? And so I'm entering, the mentor said to me, you got to keep, it's a new congregation, become a new minister. And if you can travel that path together every however many years, then you're going to keep serving a new congregation. You don't need to go anywhere else. And you're going to becoming a new minister. You don't need to go anywhere else. And so that's, of course, my hope. I don't plan on serving another congregation. But we will, right? Okay, here's a political question. And can you give me another, am I already at 15 minutes now? Okay, can you tell me when I'm at 15? I'm already there? Okay. If I just keep asking you this question, will we be there? Are churches allowed to talk about politics in the sermon? So you have heard me say before that I do not believe there is any reality in the separation of church and state. That's not a real thing. And if you can find me a religious entity that doesn't begin from the political, then it might be time for me to leave. Because whether we're talking about Jesus, Moses, Buddha, whomever, every single beginning is because there is an element of injustice in the world that directly affects the spirit of the people. And we cannot be whole in this world when we don't engage in what is happening outside. And when there are things happening outside that are destructive to our spirit and to our personhood, if that's not brought into this space, well, then what are we doing? So that's one. Two is Unitarian Universalism is always reflective of the larger culture, so that's just an emphasis of the first part. And three, this is what I always say, right? The political is the personal, and the personal is the spiritual. Which I'm just like saying all the same things over and over again. And then is it allowed? Yes, it's allowed. Legally, yes. I'm not, and you will never hear me say who you should vote for. But I absolutely will be lifting up areas of atrocity and disgust that happens by way of human hands and policy. Or maybe not policy, but by actions. And that's allowed. And that is not at all stepping over a 501c3 issue. That is not at all testing the waters of becoming political rather than religious. That is what we are here to do, as long as it always comes back to the Spirit. And therefore the Spirit of this body that can move out into the world for healing. Not only our own, but for others. Let's see. Some of these are repeats. Okay. How do I not live afraid? Fear gets in the way of feeling joy. I don't know. I actually am not sure that we aren't supposed to have some real deep sense of fear. There's a lot to be afraid of. It does get in the way of joy, and so they have to be balanced. If we are only expressing the things that bring us happiness and rainbows, I believe that our one given life is not put to use in the way that it could be. And forget use, is not present to those that we are in relationship with or even ourselves. Because you can't tell me that anyone here hasn't been or isn't right now afraid of something, in despair about something. And so there's avoidance when we just go into one space or another. So this comes down to a spiritual practice for me. Where do you make room for allowing yourself some space to be afraid or sad or in despair? And then how do you intentionally move outside of that? Where do you, who are afraid and weary right now, intentionally make room for joy? Because that's as hard sometimes, as we hear in this question, as it is, because we're inundated, right? We're inundated with the fear and the concern from the larger world. So for me, I have to shut off my phone. I have to say I'm not checking email. Tara's listening in the nursery. She knows, like, and when do you do this? But when I do this, and I'll tell you, I do it on Fridays because Tobias isn't in daycare and I can't respond to anything else. And when I feel the distraction of what I'm supposed to be doing, and then I see this child in front of me who is picking up another stick in which he's going to play another trumpet, right? Like, I have to decide in that moment that that's going to be a moment of joy rather than a moment of distraction. And the distraction is answering to the fears and the sorrows and so forth. So this is a spiritual practice question to me. I'm going to do one more. I have 2 minutes. As you can see, I can't do one in 2 minutes. Sorry, here we go. Okay, I'm going to read this out loud. I don't know what it says. How can we get kids and older comfortable explaining who we are as you use? My 11-year-old grandson says he tells his friends he's Catholic because it's easier. Yeah. I love this question because this is, we do this, I'm part of this. We put a lot of stock on making sure our kids can do this, and yet have we done this? How comfortable are we talking to the person at the grocery store or our neighbor or Aunt Bertha who's come for Thanksgiving for the 20th time and still wants to know if you're going to church, right? How comfortable are we at explaining Unitarian Universalism? Because until we do that, I hate to say this, but like, you all are your children's first minister, and or your grandchild's first or second minister. You're teaching them what it means to be a human, a Unitarian Universalist, a faithful person, whatever those mean for you. And unless you make it part of your culture, your family, and your community culture, it's never going to get easier. So what are your practices at home? Do they take pride in lighting a chalice at dinner and expressing a joy and sorrow from the day? Do they know how to articulate why the first or seventh principle is really important to them in an exampled way? How do you practice that so that it's not 45 minutes once a week? Because the Catholics do know how to do it. They've always known how to do the smells and bells of church. And it creates an identity. And so how are we going to create an identity that we can give to our children that they feel confident in? I was the only one, K through 12, who was a Unitarian Universalist. So there were times where I opted out, but that was rare. And it was because I had a deep identity and sense of pride of who we were and who we are. All right. I know I'm over. What religious tradition were you raised in? Unitarian Universalist. I'm an atheist. Are there many here like me? Okay, this is going to be the last one I end on. All right, so here's what I love. Yes, of course there are many like you. I think that maybe, so here's what I'll say. I did in the last 5 years, newcomer gathering. How many people attended that in the winter? Okay, so a handful of folks. And I asked people to do a spectrum, a continuum game, and I said, I asked different questions, ranging from, do you sit in the same spot on a Sunday morning, to, do you come to 9:15 or 11, to are you a theist or an atheist, and then had to put some language around that. And it was pretty split down the middle. Our congregation is not unlike other Unitarian Universalist congregations, except that I think it is healthier in that it does not seem to be a fight or something that we are afraid of naming. It's a sense of exploration of saying who we are and how we understand language and where else we find inspiration, if not in traditional mythological or religious language. So I offer that to you, that our newcomers, the 89 or whatever there was about 6 months ago, there were, I think, I don't know, who else was there that can help me? I think there was probably 60, 40, though, or maybe I'll say 40 people felt like they were in the theist category. Once I described it the way that I did with my first question, atheists were toward the pulpit, and then there were a smattering of people who were in the middle of agnostic and not really sure or didn't really feel the need to answer it. But yes, of course. You don't hear that language from me, or I'll say, you hear the language of spirit from me because that's who I am. And I believe that we can engage with one another in as honest and authentic as of a way as we have so far that has led to a healthy and good relationship in a healthy and good way. Now, if that's not the case, if you feel shut down by my language, if you feel unheard or unrepresented, you just need to tell me that, and I'll be aware of it. When I write sermons, I have 5 stick people in my head, and I think, how is this person going to hear this theme? How is this person going to hear that language? How is this person going to hear this story? Right? And you're all like exaggerations of yourself, the atheist, the theist, the person who's coming in with despair, the person who is coming in overjoyed. What are they leaving with? So, yes, of course. Thank you.
Thank you.
The poet David White writes, "Sometimes if you move carefully through the forest, breathing like the ones in the old stories,